All right, so we'll say good morning. We left off. Well, we're going to pick up top of Kuf Chav Aleph, the Mishnah. So we'll say again. So now, continuing a little bit still on the din of Deleika, but now going in a little bit of a different direction. So the Mishnah says the following. Nachri, Sheba Lechavos. If you have a situation of a Nachri, a non-Jew, that came to extinguish a fire on Shabbos. So now again, my home is on fire, and the non-Jew shows up to go ahead and extinguish it. So the Gemara, so the Mishnah says, "Ein omrim lo kabe ve'al techabe mipnei she'in shevisaso aleihem." So the Mishnah essentially says, when he shows up and he wants to extinguish it, I let him do whatever he wants. I don't tell him to extinguish it, and I don't tell him not to extinguish it. Rashi says, "Ein omrim lo kabe." Now, why can't I tell him to extinguish it? After all, again, well, remember, I'm sorry. Before we get to Rashi, so the Mishnah says, I don't tell him to go ahead and extinguish it. And I don't tell him not to extinguish it. Why? Mipnei she'ein shevisaso aleihem. Because ultimately, the resting of the non-Jew on Shabbos is not an obligation upon me. So look at Rashi. Ein omrim lo chabe, rabbanan gozer al amira lenachri mishum shavus. Now we'll say again here. We'll spend a lot more time in the sugya in the future datum of the Gemara. But this is the idea of amira lenachri. So amira lenachri means that you can't instruct a non-Jew to do anything on Shabbos that you yourself cannot do. Why is that? So Rashi here comes and says, Mishum Shavus. Mishum Shavus means that there are certain things that Chazal instituted in order to maintain an atmosphere of quote-unquote rest on Shabbos. These are Dinei D'Rabbanan, these are rabbinic laws. The rabbis felt were necessary to maintain the general integrity of the atmosphere of Shabbos. So that says Rashi is the reason why you can't tell the non-Jew to extinguish it. Below Techabeh, on the other hand, if the non-Jew begins to extinguish the fire, I don't have to tell him to stop. I don't tell him to stop. Why? Because there's no obligation of Shabbos on him. Right? He has no obligation. Because he has no obligation, I don't have to tell him to stop doing melacha. Fine. Aval katan, but if a child, sheba lechavos, let's say you have a child who sees the fire and the child begins, there's a Jewish child, begins to extinguish the fire on Shabbos, Ein shomin lo. Ein shomin lo means we do not permit him to do this. Why? Because the obligation to have the children go ahead and observe Shabbos is what? That obligation is upon me. Rashi says, wrong Rashi. We'll read the Rashi anyway. Shein shivisaso, shanachri aleihen, the Yisrael eno musra al shivisaso, shanachri she'eno avdo. So let's remember, again, I am obligated to ensure that a certain type of non-Jew keep Shabbos, that's my Eved, this week's Parsha, right? That's my Eved, that my servant is not permitted to work on Shabbos, but an unaffiliated non-Jew, meaning an unaffiliated non-Jew, not affiliated with me, I have no obligation on Shabbos, therefore if he wants to extinguish the fire, that's not a problem. A Jewish katan, on the other hand, if he comes to go ahead and what? And extinguish the fire, then I must tell him to stop. I must tell him to stop, because I do have an obligation to ensure that the katan does not do malacha on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Amr Rabbi Ami, b'deleiko hitiru lomar kol mechabe eino mafsid. So Rabbi Ami said the following: when it comes to a fire, you are permitted to say, you are permitted to make an announcement, whoever extinguishes the fire will not lose out. Will not lose out. Rabbi will say, what does that mean? That a person, says Rabbi Ami, a person is allowed to go ahead, assuming, let's say a person standing around non-Jews. So a person can't, as the Mishnah said, a person can't tell the non-Jew, come, please extinguish my fire. But a person could make a veiled statement, or maybe a not-so-veiled statement, saying that, really, if you help out, then halacha l'maisa, well, not halacha l'maisa, practically speaking, you won't lose out. You'll be handsomely rewarded for helping. And obviously, the non-Jew is going to take that cue and put out the fire. So the Gemara says, Neima misayele. So the truth is, our Mishnah could support this idea. What does our Mishnah say? Nochri sheba lechavos. If my house is on fire and a non-Jew shows up to help me extinguish it, ein omrim lo kabe, I can't tell him to extinguish it. Ve'al techabe, but I also don't have to tell him not to extinguish it. Mipnei she'ein shevisaso aleihen, because again, there is no obligation for me to ensure that he rests on Shabbos. So the Gemara darshins, kabehu delo amrin alei, I can't tell him to extinguish it. Ha kol mechabe eino mafsid amrin alei. But yes, I can't tell him explicitly to go and extinguish the fire. But what can I say? I can say, whoever goes in and extinguishes it, you know, will not lose out. Will not lose out. Look at Rashi. This is interesting. So, Rashi over here says something interesting. I want to say that when I tell the non-Jew to go ahead and, when I tell the non-Jew to go and extinguish the fire on Shabbos explicitly, he becomes my shaliach. Which Rashi can't be talking literally, because first of all, there's no halachic shlichus by a non-Jew. That's the first thing. Halachic shlichus is only by a Jew. What do I mean by that? You could obviously employ a non-Jew as your agent to make you do things. But the principle of shlucho shel adam kimoso, the principle that a person's shaliach is an extension of himself, only applies one Jew to another, does not apply to another Jew. So Rashi over here can't be meaning that you literally make him your shaliach mamish. What Rashi's saying over here is that halacha lemaisa, again, because of the shvus, I can't tell him to explicitly go ahead and put out my fire. But remember, because this is rabbinic, in rabbinic law, the rabbis always have the right to define the parameters of their law. So on one hand, the rabbi said, you can't ask a non-Jew to do malacha, so I can't ask a non-Jew explicitly to extinguish the fire, but I can make a non-explicit statement, says the rabbis. I can make a veiled or a hinted statement saying, I'd really like you to do this, and if you do it, you'll be handsomely rewarded. Hopefully, the non-Jew will pick up the hint, do it, and ultimately take care of the fire. Sigmar says, 1 second, Ema Seifa. What do you do about the seifa? What does the seifa say? Al techabe, lo amrinon le. Right? That ultimately, I don't have to tell him not to extinguish it. V'chol amechabe eino mafsid nami lo amrinon le. So we'll say, interestingly enough, I could have made the inference from the Mishnah that the same way that the Mishnah says that I can't tell the non-Jew not to extinguish the fire, maybe I also can't tell the non-Jew, chol amechabe eino mafsid, that whoever extinguishes it will not lose out. The Gemara says, you're right. From this Mishnah, you can't bring a support to the statement of Rabbi Ami. I just want to point out that Halacha Lemaisa, we accept the view of Rabbi Ami, that in the case, let's say, of where a person is going to encounter a significant financial loss, although he would not ask the non-Jew directly to extinguish the fire, he would be permitted to make this veiled statement trying to solicit the help of the non-Jew in extinguishing the fire. Tan Rabbanan, Maisa v'nafla deleika b'chatzero shel Yosef ben Simoi b'shichin. So also listen to this. There was a story where a fire broke out in the chatzer of Yosef ben Simoi, who was in the city of Sichin. Okay. Ubo anshe gistera shel tzipori lechavos. And what happens? The anshe gistera, now look at Rashi. Rashi is gistera shilton. The king's men came to help extinguish the fire. Now, why? Now remember, again, what's interesting over here is it was the king's men who were stationed in Tzipori came to go ahead and put out the fire in Shichin. Now, Shichin is not far from Tzipori, but it is interesting that the king's men would be mobilized to go and put out a fire of a Jew on Shabbos. So why? Very good reason. Mitnei she'apotropos shel melech haya. For the simple reason, Yosef ben Simoi was the king's accountant. Right? Literally, apotropos means treasurer. Right? But he was the king's accountant. He was a chash of a person in the inner circle of the king. So the soldiers mobilized to go out and put out the fire. Velohi nichan. And interestingly enough, Yosef ben Simoi would not allow the soldiers to put out the fire. Not allow the soldiers to put out the fire. Fine. Mipnei kavod haShabbos. Because Yosef ben Simoi apparently felt that for the non-Jew to put out the fire would somehow impugn on the kavod of Shabbos. The na'aseh lo nes, a miracle occurred. The yardu gishamim, it began to rain. The kibu, and they extinguished the fire. So it's amazing. So Yosef ben Simoi won't allow them in his mind to be machal Shabbos on his behalf, and therefore it rained, put out the fire. Shiger l'chol echal mehem shtei salon ula aparkos shabahen chamishim. So after Shabbos, Yosef ben Simoi wanted to express his gratitude for the fact that the soldiers came to try to put out the fire. So he sent two slum to each of the soldiers, and to the aparkos, to the officer in charge of them, he sent 50 coins. Okay. U'kishashamu chacham bedavar, when the chacham heard this story, amru lo hayat tzarech lekach. They said to Yosef ben Simoi, you did not need to act this way. Why? Shahari shaninu nochri sheba lechavos ein omrim lo kabe va'al techabe. See, because again, what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says if you have a fire on Shabbos and a non-Jew shows up and wants to extinguish it, well, you don't tell the non-Jew to do it, but you also need not tell the non-Jew not to do it. So Yosef ben Simai, you did not ask the soldiers to come and extinguish the fire. When they came of their own volition, you could have gone ahead and allowed them to, you can't ask them to do it, but once they're doing it, you could allow them. You did not have to turn away their offers of help. Fine. Says the Gemara. Aval katan sheba lechabos in shomim lo mipnei sheshevisaso aleihem. But the Rabbi says, it's interesting. And by the way, you should just know this halacha has a lot of ramifications in terms of sometimes when people are in a bind on Shabbos, there is often a reflexive reaction to use children to do things. So it's not so pashut. I'll leave it at that. So the Gemara says over here, and this is exactly what the Mishnah is talking about, right? So again, the fire is here. The katan, the little kid is showing up, wants to eat, thinks it's fun. He's taking his pail of water, just throwing it on the fire. So the halacha says the Mishnah that you have to stop him from doing it. Why? Just so you should know, it's this week's parasha. You know, it's okay. I'll get a little. I'll show you. It's Mamash Rashi brings down in this week's parasha in the Dibra of Shabbos that the adults, the Gedolim, are Mitzuvim ala Ketanim. The adults are obligated to ensure that the young ones keep Shabbos as well. So says the Gemara. Aval Shamas Mina, we can learn a very interesting halacha from this. Katan Ochel Nevelos. If there is a child who is eating non kosher food, based in Mitzuvim alav lahafrisho. Beis Din is obligated to stop him. Now what the Gemara is saying over here is that Lemaisa, let's say for some reason, if the parents are not doing it, or the parents are not present, whatever the situation is, that we are obligated to ensure that a child does not violate an Isra. We'll say, what does Havamina is, a child is a child, right? The child doesn't have obligations. So maybe, listen, who cares? So just you should know, this is not like an abstract idea. You know, this comes up in the maturation of a child very, very early, is milk and meat. Right? The idea being that children often, whether they can't wait, whether they're eating together, a child is eating flesh sticks, and then sometimes children are finicky, right? They're picky, and I don't want the flesh stick, right? I want pudding, I want ice cream, whatever. So the shayla is, meaning, how far is a parent obligated to go to ensure that their child adheres to halacha? Of course, there's not one answer, because a lot of that does depend on the age of the child. But the point the Mishnah is making over here is you see that children, you don't give a children just a free pass in areas of halacha. That if a child is transgressing something, really the parent, or whoever's responsible, should try to ensure the child does not do that. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Shamas mina katan ochan levelos besim mitzuban lafrisho, v'tikshi l'rab yochran da'arbi yivamas, the irkusu lay mimishpot mipsachos shabes amedrish, mipsachos shabes amedrish, bishus rab mishabis, the bartalya vitalisa litle hasam di mishkaksu maisilu. So we'll say, we're not going to get into this case, but they were dealing in Yevamos with certain cases where the katan was engaged in an act of chutzah. And there was a machlokas as to whether or not they'd have to stop the katan from doing so. So the Gemara just says, you see from here, from the fact that we don't allow the katan to extinguish the fire, that a katan is eating non-kosher, we would stop him from doing so. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the katan ha'ose l'das aviv. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what's the case over here? With a katan who's engaging in this action with the knowledge of his father. Look at Rashi. Al-das aviv. Bekatan sheyada lahavchin shakibui ze noach la'aviv va'ose bishvilo. Shabbi Yochanan Rav Ozeh wants to qualify the case of the Mishnah. What kind of katan are we dealing with over here? A katan who knows that extinguishing the fire is something that his father would want, right? So meaning a child who's old enough to understand that the extinguishing of the fire is something that is objectively in the interests of his parents. So in that type of case, Rabbi Yochanan says you have to stop the katan from doing it. Why? Because in that case, the katan is kiviyachol acting as the agent, as the shaliach, on behalf of the parent. That's when it's problematic. What Rabbi Yochanan seems to be saying, however, is if the child was much younger, let's say the child just thought it was fun to throw water on fire, but the child has absolutely no concept of loss of possessions, the child has absolutely no concept of what the parents are thinking, so in that case, Rabbi Yochanan might say that you'd allow the katan to go out and do it. Dikavosa gabe nochri, dikavid ledaiti di Israel Mishari. So the Gemara says, because for when it comes to the non-Jew, if the non-Jew were to do something with the intention of the Jew, should it be permitted? The Rabbah said, what the Gemara is asking over here is somewhat of a rhetorical question. What the Gemara is saying was, let me get this straight. So what you're telling me is, if the Katan does something because he knows that his parents would want it, then what? Then you have to stop it. But one second, what did we say in the Mishnah? Why is the non-Jew showing up and putting out the fire? The Pashtos. Right? So, okay, you could say he's just a good Samaritan. That's possible, and he just, whatever. But the Pashtos, he's doing it for me. Right? He's doing it for me. He's doing it because he sees that I'm going to suffer a loss. It's not just that he puts out fires as a hobby. Right? So, so the Gemara says, using that logic, then what? Then why should the non-Jew go ahead and be able to put it out? If we're saying that any situation, even the Katan, where somebody is really acting on my behalf, we don't let that go forward, then I shouldn't allow the non-Jew to put out the fire, even when what? When I'm not the one who's asking him to do it, because he's clearly doing it for me. To which the Gemara gives a fascinating yisod. Look at Rashi for just a moment. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So says the Gemara, l'dayte d'nafshe avid. No. When a non-Jew does something, he does it for himself. Now I will say, what the Gemara is espousing over here is an incredible thing of psychology. Not just by non-Jews, he's saying people. People, most people, 99% of people, are not altruistic. Most people, even when they do something that appears altruistic, there's always some self-serving measure. It's not a bad thing, because at the end of the day, it still motivates us to do good. But we say, Nachriya Daite Dinafshe, when the non-Jew puts out the fire, why is he putting out the fire? Why is he putting out the fire? Because there's going to be some, whether it's material reward, whether it's goodwill, whatever it is, there is going to be some benefit that is going to accrue from this particular act. Therefore, what the Gemara is really saying is that whereas children, and maybe here's the psychological chilik, whereas children might really sometimes actually do something purely for a parent or for someone else, adults, when they do things for utilitarian, self-serving purposes. Again, I don't mean to frame this in a negative fashion. It's just saying whatever we do in life, the truth is whether we ask it consciously or subconsciously, before we do something in life, the question that's often asked is, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? And by the way, it's not a bad thing, because sometimes that's the motivator. We try to progress past that, but the Gemara says at the end of the day, he's doing it for himself.
We're supposed to get past that.
I think we should try. I think the goal ultimately is to try to do something altruistic. No?
If you say,
okay. So the Gemara says the following. All right, so the Mishnah. So we'll say, so the Maisa, what comes out in this particular situation is, again, so number one, we pass him that if the Najew shows up to put out the fire, I don't have to tell him to stop, but I also can't tell him explicitly to go ahead and put out the fire. I can, however, make the remes. I can make the hinted statement of whoever puts out the fire is going to be handsomely ruled, will not lose. Right, which again, the reason I can do that is because the whole idea of the Nachri putting out the fire is a din d'rabbanon. The Rabbanon said I could use this verbiage. When it comes to a katan, if the katan goes ahead and begins to put out the fire, if it's understood that the katan is really doing it for me, I have to stop him. Apparently, if he's younger and he doesn't really understand what he's doing, I don't have to stop him. By extension, Rav Osai, we pretty much apply that to in other areas as well. A child that is old enough to at least understand on some level that there are things you do, things you don't do, things that are permitted, things that are not permitted. A parent should not allow the child to transgress. And a parent should not allow the child to do things. Even though the child is not chayiv for that, a parent should not allow that to happen. If the child is so young that the child literally has no conception,
that's why we're letting him play with fire.
I'm sorry, that's why we're letting him play with fire. Right? He's so young, it's okay. But I'll say, again, you can imagine this comes up all the time with young children. So the kid pulls out the mukta toy on Shabbos. So some parents have a heart attack. The kid doesn't know what he's doing. Leave him alone. Doesn't make a difference. If the child is old enough to be able to understand that on Shabbos there are things we do, things we don't do, then the parents should not allow that to perpetrate. The same way that, if the child understands that there's Shabbos, the parents shouldn't bring the child next to the thermostat and say, wow, it's so hot. Right? It's so hot to, push the kid's hand onto the... obviously, using your child as a vehicle to commit the amalacha is not really the best chinuch, says the Mishnah.
And this with the grasshopper, right? The child.
Correct. Exactly, right? The kid... Exactly. Says the Mishnah, Kofin Kara, the contemporary application of the grasshopper case would be Basar B'chalof. Basar B'chalof. Kofin Kara Agabe Haner, B'shil Shelo Techos B'kora. You can go ahead and put a... Kara is literally a bowl on top of a candle. in order that it does not, in order that the flame does not latch onto the core of the beam or on top of it. But I will say the idea over here is you now want to engage in a preventative measure to prevent a fire from occurring. Now the case over here is, you're taking an earthenware, Rashi says, an earthenware bowl, and you're putting it over the fire. Now, also, we're going to see, and just, I'll just give you one piece of information that's very important, because Rashi already brings it down, that the idea over here is that it's when you put the bowl over the fire, you're not depriving the fire of all oxygen. Because if you're depriving the fire of all oxygen, then that's going to be kibui. That's going to go ahead and be extinguishing. You can't violate the malacha for the sake of saving money. So the idea has to be over here that you're putting the bowl over it, but there's still obviously some oxygen that's able to get in, so the nair doesn't definitely go out. Similarly, the atzoa shel katan, you could put a bowl on Shabbos also over all the excrement of a katan, right? Well, I will see. We'll see exactly what that means. The excrement over the katan. So the Gemara says, the al akrav shel tishach. And similarly, again, over a scorpion that should not bite you. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ma'isa ba'lifnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai be'erev, or ba'arav, I should say. An episode came before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in Arav. Arav is a place. Va'amar choshishani lo mechatos, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I think the person who did this maybe chay v'chatos. Now we'll say, what's the case? Look at Rashi. May seba kfias kli al akrov. There was once an episode where someone put a bowl over a scorpion, and they came and they asked Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai about this. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Rashi choshishani lo mechatos. Kevan shlo haya akrov ratz acharov. The scorpion was not running after him, meaning the person was not in danger. Emi yodem chay mishum tzeda im lab. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the case in the Mishnah was somebody put a bowl over a scorpion. The scorpion was not pursuing him. There is no danger. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I think he might have violated an av malacha of tzeda, of trapping on Shabbos, hunting on Shabbos, and because of that, I think that he may be chayev chatos. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda v'Rav Yirmiya bar Abba v'Rav Hanan bar Rava. Listen to this story. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, and Rav Hanan bar Rava, ikla'u lebei Rav Avin demin Neshikya. They went to the house of Avin from Neshikya. Rav Yehuda v'Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, Rav Yehuda and Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, Aisu lohu pur yasa. So Avin brought out couches for them. Brought out couches for them to sit on. Rav Hanan bar Rava, lo aisu le. For whatever reason, so Avin did not feel that Rav Hanan bar Rava was a real Talmid Chacham, and therefore he didn't feel the need to bring him out a couch. If you're sorry, whatever he said, on a stool, whatever it was. Ashkechei masni de libre. So interestingly enough, so then they were there, and Rav Hanan bar Rava, the Rav without the couch, the Rav who was not supposed to be a Talmid Chacham, overhears Avin teaching his son the following halacha. Va'altsoa shal katan, mitnei katan. That on Shabbos you are permitted to go ahead and place a utensil over the excrement of a child, for the sake of the child. What does that mean? They were concerned that if you don't cover the excrement, the child himself is going to begin to mess around with the excrement and soil himself on Shabbos. Amar Lei, Rav Hanan heard this and he said, Avin Shatya, Avin the fool, Masni Shtusa Libnei, is teaching foolishness to his son. So essentially, Rav Hanan bar Rava was saying, wow, what a chutzpah, right? You treat me like I'm not a Talmud Chacham, and you are an Amma Aretz yourself. Why? What happened? V'halohi atzma muchanes l'klavim. So we'll say, here's the interesting chav. The idea, the chiddush of the idea of going ahead and covering the excrement on Shabbos is that the pashtus, the excrement, is mukta. And now what you'd be doing is you'd be moving a kli to serve a mukta item, which we've already said earlier you don't normally do. Right? You can only move a kli for the sake of something else that can be moved. But to move a kli for the sake of excrement would seem to move. So, but the Mishnah allows it. Obviously, it's a specific case. So Rav Hanan says, you're teaching the case wrong. Why? Because the excrement of a child is not mukta. Why is it not mukta? Because it's usable by dogs. It's usable by dogs. Now, when I say usable, apparently dogs eat it. Dogs eat it. I guess there's a difference. I guess in the quality of excrement of children than, let's say, of adults, that the dogs eat it. Therefore, it's not considered to be mukta. Rashi says, "V'halo muchenes leklavim, v'lamuli lichvos kli yifnu amisham shai ru'uy letaltel." So what Rav Hanan is saying is, therefore, on Shabbos, if you want to move it, you don't have to put a kli on top of it. Why? What can you do with it? You could just simply move it if you want. Why? Because it's not mukta. Why is it not mukta? Because it's edible by dogs. Maybe you'll say, no, it's mukta. Why, Rabotai? Because halacha lemaisa, it wasn't prepared from yesterday. Obviously, the child just excreted it now. Right? So it wasn't prepared from yesterday. So he says, no, listen to this. But we learned, naros hamoshchin u'ma'ayonos hanovin. If you have rivers that flow and springs that spring forth, harihim kiragle kol adam, they are like the feet of the person who draws. And we'll say, what does this mean? Listen to this case. Let's say I draw water on Shabbos. Assume I can draw water on Shabbos. So normal halacha is that if you have an object that was in a different tchum before Shabbos, different Shabbos boundary, and comes into your tchum, you can't move it on Shabbos. Dalet Amos, right? You can't move it on Shabbos. Same way that if I walk into another tchum, I'm limited in my amount of space in that new tchum. So if I draw water on Shabbos, then what? Let's say from a flowing river. The pashtos, that water wasn't what? That water wasn't in my tchum on Erev Shabbos. If the water wasn't in my tchum on Erev Shabbos, I shouldn't be able to take it anywhere. Yet the halacha is, if you draw water on Shabbos, that water can go wherever you go. Why? What's the logic? The logic is because any object that you expect to be within your tchum on Shabbos, even if it's not in your tchum prior to Shabbos, has the status of being in your tchum at the onset of Shabbos. So since I know that the waters of the river flow, I know that whatever waters I end up drawing on Shabbos will be here come Shabbos, even though now before Shabbos they're totally somewhere else. So the Gemara wants to suggest that since it's common for a child, right, for a child to excrete, therefore, lemaisa, even though the excrement was not there before Shabbos, it's like the flowing river, right? It's like the flowing river, and therefore, again, there's an expectation that it'll be here, and therefore, again, it's not muktza on Shabbos itself, since it's set aside, since it's usable for the dogs. Hari karagli kol adam. So Rashi, look at Rashi quickly. Actually, no. Well, I just told you, Rashi. You trust me. So the Gemara says the following: Ve'ela. So here's what's interesting. So Ravin has just been given some significant learning mussar from Rav Hanan bar Rava, right? The man who he did not regard as a Talmud Chacham. So he tells Rav Hanan bar Rava, he says, how should I teach this Mishnah to my son? No, what's the case? The case is that on Shabbos, you could take a utensil, put it on top of excrement of chickens. Why? Now, I will say, excrement of chickens apparently is not edible by dogs. Therefore, by definition, it is going to be mukta. So why can I go ahead and move a kli to cover it on Shabbos? Mipnei katan. I can do that for the sake of the child. What does that mean? Because if I don't cover it, what's going to end up happening? The child's going to end up soiling himself with it. Look at Rashi. Tzua shel tarnagolim. Delo chazi leklavim. It's not edible by dogs. V'shal katan diktani masnisin shemetapeach ba katan kam v'shal katan amar kovin. So we'll say, says Rav Hanan Barav, excuse me, that the chiddush of the Mishnah is that even though the excrement is mukta, and you normally can't move a kli for the sake of a mukta item, here for the benefit of the child I am permitted to do so. So the Gemara says, v'seivuklei, v'havigraf shalrei. We'll say, it's a simpler idea. You should be able to go ahead and move the excrement itself. Why? Because it's graf shalrei. We'll say graf shalrei literally means a vessel that contains waste. Or a vessel like, for example, on Shabbos, if you have a bedpan, you're permitted to go ahead and empty out the bedpan. It's the same way. Why can you take out the garbage on Shabbos? After all, again, garbage is mukta. Garbage is mukta. Why can you take out the garbage on Shabbos? Because Chazal, remember, mukta is rabban. It's drabbanon. Chazal said that things that are disgusting, like things that are not nice, that if you keep them around, it's just not going to be pleasant on Shabbos, you can move on Shabbos. Same way, reason you could go ahead and you could remove the chicken bones from your table after you finish eating. It's mukta, it has no purpose anymore. Graf shalrei. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, why do you have to bring the utensil to put it over the excrement? Why can't you just move the excrement directly? It's graf shalrei, it's something disgusting. You can get it out of your way on Shabbos. V'chi tema graf shalrei agav mona in ihu gufei lo. So maybe you'll say that the rabbinic dispensation to move something that is disgusting that would otherwise be mukta is only when it's in a utensil. So that's when I don't have to handle the graf shel rei directly, but it's in a utensil. Chazal said I can move the utensil that has the graf shel rei, but I can't move the graf shel rei itself. But one second, the Gemara, we have a case that contradicts that. Hahu achbar diishtachach beis parmoki derav Ashi. There was the case of the mouse that was found in the isparmoki. Rashi says besamig. So one time they found a dead mouse in the spice cabinet of Rav Ashi. Va'amru, and Rav Ashi gave instructions. Nakutu bitzutzise va'afkuha. Lift it up by its tail and throw it out. So what do you see from here? That when it comes to a graf shel rei, something disgusting, you could even handle it directly. If that's the case, why don't you just get rid of the excrement? You don't have to go ahead and start bringing in a kli to cover it up. To which the Gemara says, ba'ashpa. Because we're talking about a case over here where what? Where halacha lemaisa, the excrement is in the ashpa. Right? It's already in the garbage dump. That's where the excrement is, already in the garbage dump. So the Gemara says, therefore, where you're going to move it, there's no way to move it, it's already in the garbage dump. So therefore, you're bringing the utensil. Why? Because I don't want the kid to go ahead and soil himself with the excrement. The katam ba'ashba my boile. What is the child playing? Why is the child playing in the garbage dump? Right? What is the child doing there? To which the Gemara says, b'chatzer. Ah, because it's in the courtyard. The Gemara says, well, I don't understand. B'chatzer nami graf shel reihu. But if it's in the courtyard, then the courtyard is like your house. You have the ability to remove the waste directly. To which the Gemara says, "Ba'ashpa shebechatzer." We're talking about a case of what Rabbi Ozai, where there is a garbage dump in the chatzer itself. Therefore, again, it's common for the child to be there because it's the chatzer. On the other hand, there's no point in allowing you to handle the excrement directly. Why? Because where you're going to move it, it's already in the garbage dump. And therefore, the dispensation over here in the Mishnah is kofen ale karo. You could go ahead and you could put a kli on top of it to go ahead and prevent the katan from playing with it. So the chiddush over here is that whereas normally you can't go ahead and move a kli to serve an object that is mukta, that itself can't be moved, here in order to prevent the child from soiling himself, Chazal relaxed their standards. Weiter. Val akrav shlo tishach. Similarly, you can go ahead and put a utensil on top of a scorpion in order that it not bite. Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Well, this is a very interesting statement. Rabbi Shimon Levi says, anything that is harmful, you can kill on Shabbos. Kol ha-mazikin. Right? Neharagin b'Shabbos. Rashi says, v'chasaka daitcha afilo inon rotzen acharav. U'mishum desfile kerabshum nevelach shen tzichal agufa midrabani da'asir v'hachal o'gazer. So here you have a statement of Rabbi Shimon Levi. He says, anything that's harmful, you can kill on Shabbos. Now Rashi says, the assumption over here is what? Even if those objects are not, or those entities, those things are not pursuing you. Right? So if I see something that's harmful on Shabbos, even if it has not done anything to me, I can proactively kill it. Now, the assumption the Gemara is making over here is that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi would hold, like Rabbi Shimon, who holds that a malacha shenei tzricha legufa is not usher on Shabbos, and since again, if I kill the object, I'm not killing it for the object, I'm killing it to rid myself of the nuisance, it would be permitted on Shabbos. Now, I will say again, remember, this is not talking about where there's a danger. Obviously, again, if there's a danger, that goes without saying, this is mazikin. So you know what this is? This says, the bee is flying around me. I don't want to get stung by the bee, because getting stung by a bee is a harmful thing. I could proactively kill the bee, even though what? It has nothing to do with me. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, one second. Chamisha neharagin b'Shabbos. There are five things you could kill on Shabbos. The Eluhin, and these are they. Zvuv sheberet Yisrayim, the Egyptian fly. Tzira sheben ninve, the ninve wasp. Akrov shebe chadyab, the chadyabian scorpion. The nachash shebe eretz Yisrael, and an Israeli snake. An Israeli snake. The kelev shote bechal makom, and a crazy dog. Crazy dogs are always problematic. In any place. So the Gemara says, money. Whose opinion does this reflect? David, you listen to that one. All right? Money. Right? So whose opinion does this reflect? Ilema Rabbi Yehuda. See, if he says Rabbi Yehuda, that can't be why. Ha'amar malacha shenetzricha legufa chayiv aleh. That can't be because Rabbi Yehuda holds that. I must remember there is an av malacha of shechita, of killing an object, killing an animal. Now, why? What's the essence of that malacha? The essence of that malacha is because you want the object, right? You want the item. Whether you want the item to eat, whether you want the item for its hide, but the idea is it's killing because you want the item that you are killing, the object that you are killing. So over here, this is a malach shetzirich legufa, right? Because again, I'm killing the animal. Why? Because I don't want the nuisance. I don't want it. I'm going to throw it away. I'm not even going to touch it. I don't want anything to do with it. So the Gemara says, who's opinion does this reflect? It can't be Rabbi Huda, because Rabbi Huda holds that a malach shetzirich legufa, you're chayiv. El alav Rabbi Shimon. So it must be Rabbi Shimon. Vahahu dishari. So the Gemara says, I love Rabbi Shimon. So it must be a reflective view of Rabbi Shimon. V'hanihu d'shari achrini lo. The Rabbi says, the Braisa is very specific. What does the Braisa say? The Braisa speaks of five different things that pose a danger that you are permitted to kill on Shabbos. But it clearly limits it to what? To these five. Which seems to contradict the Braisa earlier, or I should say the statement of Rabbi Yoshua Levi, who said that you could kill any mazik you want on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Uman name Allah Daha Mitaretz Tehi Dilma Mishabesh Tehi. So Rabbi Yirmiya says, well, one second. Who says that this Braisa is correct? Maybe the Braisa of Rav Yosef, right? Maybe the Braisa is incorrect. Amar Rav Yosef, Ana Masnina La Vos Vina La Vana Mitaretzna La. So Rabbi Yosef says, no, I have this Braisa, I have this Mishnah in my records. And I have the understanding of it, and I will explain it. What's the case? Beratzu acharav v'divrei hakol. The case over here. Look at Rashi. V'anam mitaras nala delo tikshi ki amar Rabbi Yosef ben Levi kalam azikin neragin beratzu acharav kamar debi kuach neveshu. So says Rabbi Yosef, I will explain to you how to reconcile the two brisos. The statement of Rabbi Yosef ben Levi that you can kill. Anything, any mazik, any harmful item, or any harmful animal, is talking about what? Beratzu acharav, where the animal, right, where the insect has already begun to pursue you, right? And in that case, v'divrei hakol, everyone agrees that in the case of where a mazik is, let's again remember, lav davka sakana, doesn't have to be danger over these are mazikin, harmful things. So everyone agrees that if the bee, mamish, has its sights set on you, that halacha lemaisa, you can go ahead and kill it on Shabbos. We'll see, not everybody agrees. But for now, that's the agreement. V'ratza acharav v'divrei hakol. Tani tano kamei d'rava. So the Tana taught the following statement in front of Rava, Barav Huda. Ha'horig nechoshim v'akravim b'Shabbos. Ein ruach chasidim nocha hemeno. So if someone kills snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, so ein ruach chasidim, the spirit of the pious ones is not pleased with him. Look at Rashi, ein ruach, second wide line, ein ruach chasidim nocha hemeno. Daitan shel chasidim einam meureves imo she'eno hagun be'eneim amas she'asa. So we must be talking about a case over here of where the snakes and scorpions are not actively pursuing him. Right, so the Hasidim say that you know what, you shouldn't kill him. Amar Leis, so listen to this, Rabosai. So Rava Bar Avuna said, Va'osan Hasidim and those pious ones, Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Mehem. You know, it's very, very nice that you're so pious, but guess what, the Chacham are not happy with you. You know, Rabosai, it's Shluyot. If there are snakes and scorpions, get rid of them, because they pose a significant danger to the individual. So it's very nice that you're trying to impose this additional level of piety. The Chachamim don't like your piety. So the Gemara says, Upligid Rav Huna. And this argues on Rav Huna. Why? What does Rav Huna say? What does Rav Huna say? So Rav Huna, Chazi Lahu Gavra, the Kakatal Zibura. Rav Huna saw a man who killed the bee. Who killed the bee? So the Gemara says, in Rav Huna, Amar Lei, Shlemi Sinhu Lekulu, did you get them all? Right? Now what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Shlemi Sinhu Lekulu, Rashi says, Harakta Eskulam, did you kill all the bees? Kilomar Ma'ahani Baha, Akati Tuva Ika, Alma Lav Shapir Avid Baha, Dirava Poligadavuha. So I'll say, interestingly enough, so the point over here is Rav Huna was apparently saying this a little bit sarcastically. So he was saying, Shkayach, you got the bee, did you get all of them? The idea being that what did you actually accomplish? It seems to be that Rav Huna was not happy with the guy killing the bee on Shabbos. So the point is, the Gemara is pointing out, you see that there's a machlokes. Not everybody agrees that you could automatically kill those things that pose some level of harm to the individual. Tan Rabbanon, Nizdamnu lo nechoshim v'akravim. This is actually an interesting case. If a snake or a scorpion passed your way, Hargan, if you killed them, Biyadua shenizdamnu lo lahargan. It's clear that they were put before you in order to kill them. Look at Rashi. Shenizdamnu lo lahargan lekach ba'u liyado shezimei lo hamakol na'abdon lefi shehayu asidos lahazik v'gilgulu zchus ayidei zakai. So apparently what the Brisa says is if you have the opportunity, if the snake or scorpion crosses your path, you have the opportunity to kill it, that's a zchus. Kill it, because clearly that Kadosh Baruch Hu put it in your way so that you could kill it and prevent it from damaging someone else. Lo hargan, if you did not kill it, biyadua shenizdamnu lahargo If you did not go ahead and kill it, so no, which seems to almost indicate, Rashi says over here, this seems almost like if it passed by you but you did not kill it, or you tried to kill it but were not successful, that's a simon that what? That what? That it's after you, but a nes occurred that it did not kill you. Okay? So the Gemara says, Amr Ulavi Timur Abba Rav Chana, Amr Rav Yochanan, Bini Shufin, Bo. That's only talking about a case where the object, where the snake or the scorpion was hissing at you. Meaning, when we say before that it's a simon, that ultimately it was supposed to kill you, but you were saved, that's only when the animal demonstrated some level of aggression towards you, but yet didn't attack you. That's a simon that you were deserving of being attacked, but yet you were spared because of some kind of nes. Amr Abba Bar Kahana. Pam achos nafal echad beis hamedrash. One time there was a snake. Literally, it means that fell. But there was a snake that was in the base, fell into the beis hamedrash. Amad niyusi echad v'hargo. So a niyusi is the name of a place. One niyusian went ahead, got up, and killed it. Rashi says niyusi ashem makomo v'yisrael, a Jewish guy from niyusi. So niyusian got up and killed it. Amar Rebbe. Paga bo kiyotze bo. The snake was killed by someone just like him. So the Gemara says, okay, what does that mean? Iboy luhu. Paga bo kiyotze bo the shapir of it? Is that a shkoyach? Is that like, well done? Oh, lo, or is that some kind of shtach? Right? The snake was killed by someone just like him. So what's the pshat? Look at Rashi. Says, the shapir of it, u kiyotze bo, the kamar lav lignaihu, el hanocha shrode finasa ze kiyotze bo. Right? The snake tried to kill someone, but the person killed him first. Although, or is with some kind of disparaging statement. Tashma drabi Abba b'reid rabbi Chiya bar Abba v'rabbi Zera havu yasvi akil o drabi Yanai. They were sitting on the porch of Rabbi Yanai. Nafak milsam ebinayu. And they began discussing the following situation. Bo'amin Rabbi Yanai, and they asked Rabbi Yanai the following question. Mahu la'rov nechoshen v'akrovim b'shabbos. Can you kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos? Amar lohu, Rabbi Yanai responded, Tzira ani horig, I kill a wasp. Nachash v'akrav lo, right? Lo kol shekain. So if we kill a wasp on Shabbos because it poses a potential danger, then it goes without saying what Rabbi will say, that you should certainly kill the snakes and scorpions. Dilma lefitumo. Maybe the case over here is lefitumo. What does this mean? Look at Rashi. Dilma lefitumo. Lo shiyamot alav v'yahargenu lehedya, ela kishuhu holich letumo, v'nachash o akrav befanav, ein tzorech lishomet mimenu, So we'll say, what does it mean when Rabbi Yanai says that if you're going to go ahead and kill the scorpion, that all the more so if you're going to kill the wasp, all the more so you should kill the snakes and scorpions. So the Gemara says, lav dafka, that it means that you should go out of your way to kill snakes and scorpions. Rather, what does it mean? Lefitumo. Lefitumo means if you happen upon it. Right? You have this idea. Lefitumo just as a matter of occurrence. So don't go out of your way to kill the snakes and scorpions on Shabbos. But what? But if you happen to stumble upon a snake or scorpion on Shabbos, then ein achinami, one would not have to veer away, but one would be permitted to walk on them and ultimately kill them as a result. I would say, we'll stop over here for today. Shukriya.